Well, like Tyler said, we are currently, if you didn't know, you're new to Bridgetown or you're visiting us tonight, we're currently in a series on the Sermon of the Mount. This is one of Jesus' most famous teachings that he ever gave, and honestly, in so many ways, one of the most provocative teachings he's ever given. And if you remember last week, we talked about what Jesus had to say about lust and divorce, and now that the easy stuff is out of the way, I'm going to go ahead and lead us into tonight's teaching. Yeah, you're welcome. All right, well, that bombed again. I can't believe it. It's so hard. Turn with me in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to pick up where we left off last week. Really, y'all didn't think that was funny? The hard stuff last week, and then... All right, not going to happen at the 7. So, there it is. Yeah. Yeah, some of you, two of you are sad it's not going to happen. I feel that. All right, we're going to pick up in verse 33. And here we find Jesus saying, "Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, 'Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made.' But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." Well, easy enough, right? I mean, when I think about how many oaths I took this week, we're looking at about 0. So I'm feeling like this is going to be a good teaching for me. At least that's what I thought when I initially opened it up, when I was assigned the passage. I was like, finally something I'm not terrible at, you know? So maybe you're feeling the same way tonight. But I just want to squelch that little joy that you have in your spirit for 1 second. And one of the scholars that I read this week said that this text, when viewed at face value, is deemed one of the most neglected and insignificant of all the teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. Yet, he said, for the disciple of Jesus, it can be one of the most catalytic messages for us. So, with that being said, we're going to take this line by line tonight, which is everybody's favorite, and we're going to see if we can get to the heart of what Jesus is talking about. Sound good? Yeah, keep your Bibles in front of you. Listen, I just appreciate the 5 p.m. so much. There was not a lot of verbal feedback this morning at the 10, so as you can imagine, I was dying in a vortex of bad jokes. Just very bad, and I missed you. I just want to say that. I missed you. Yeah. All right, verse 33, here we go. Jesus says, "Again, that you've heard it said to the people long ago, 'Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made.'" This line, "again, you have heard it said." Remember, this is what rabbis would say right before they were about to quote the Bible. So that's what he's doing. Jesus is about to do that. And then he also goes on to state some things further. But before he does, he's actually signaling to us in the text that he's about to give a truer interpretation than the one that had been given originally by the teachers of the day. It's over and against what had been taught by the Pharisees and Sadducees of the day. Now, in his previous verses, we know, as we remember from last week, Jesus was talking about sex. But in this passage, he's now moving into this idea of language or speech. And this is actually a really big deal, because the people who were listening of the day were people who lived in a culture of oral tradition. The whole culture revolved around language. And in a world where there was no signatures, there were no legal documents, there were no bank accounts, where most business deals were conducted verbally between two people, keeping your word had huge implications. So if someone went back on their word, let's say, you could go back to the dude and say, he did this bad. And then the people would say, well, I don't know what that was. The people would say, but there's no evidence that he was not telling the truth, or that he did that bad, whatever that was. Now today, we have things like legal stuff, that's the only language I know, that helps keep those things in line, right? That verifies whether we are or have told the truth. And in this culture, it was not so. So all that to say that the community's welfare as a whole, their flourishing, was dependent upon the trustworthiness of what someone was speaking. And so as they were listening, our people who were sitting on the mount with Jesus would have been hearing this and understanding that his words carried so much weight. Okay, next line. That line where Jesus says the people long ago, he's just referring to the fact that their ancestors, the people listening, would have heard this over and over again. And then he goes on to say, do not break your oaths, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. Now, in the Sermon on the Mount so far, Jesus has largely been quoting from the Ten Commandments. But here, there isn't an exact text that he's working from. There's more of like a combination of multiple verses all throughout the Old Testament. And some of these verses, this is what these people would have known, were this. Like Leviticus 19, he says, you shall not swear falsely. Then a verse like Deuteronomy 23, if you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow to pay for it. For the Lord your God will certainly demand it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from making a vow, you will not be guilty. Whatever your lips utter, you must be sure to do, because you made a vow freely to the Lord your God with your own mouth. More. Ecclesiastes 5, when a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said. Psalm 50, sacrifice thank offerings to God, fulfill your vows to the Most High. And so the people who were listening, all of this would have been really old, if you will, information. They would have understood that Jesus was referencing things from the Torah and that he was trying to draw their attention to the say that again? Thank you, of the vows or oaths. One thing that they did know was that culturally, to not fulfill a vow was a pretty shameful thing and was considered by the religious leaders unrighteous or unrighteousness. So what we're trying to get at, what I'm trying to get at, is that oaths were a part of the life in Jesus' world, and they were meant to verify or give credibility to one's claim of the truth. They were, in so many words, the system that was implemented to dismantle a cycle of lying. Does that make sense? And in a world and culture that had arguments and disagreements, much like ours, and who didn't have surveillance tapes or police footage, this system served as a tool to help them discern the truth, both in their public lives and in their private lives. Now, privately, oaths were made either to God or to other people. This could look like taking a vow of not cutting your hair to honor God, which is like a real thing people did. Or it could look like you were taking an oath that you didn't steal your neighbor's donkey. And if you're in Southeast Portland or they were, it would have been chicken. You know what I mean? Yeah, so it's like that. I swear I didn't take your chicken. Either way, it was personal, and it involved something larger, bigger than a commitment, just a verbal commitment. Now, public oaths or vows were taken in both the judicial and national arenas. And this might have looked something like swearing to tell the truth in court, like swearing an oath and saying, I swear, tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. They wouldn't have said that exactly, but America made it like that. So that was that. It would also look like stating their allegiance to Rome or to Caesar, with this declaration that they used to say over and over again, Caesar is Lord. And this was serious business. When an oath was made, it meant that the one making the oath was inviting or invoking the right to be judged and held accountable, which meant that in that day and time, one's lack of follow-through could have in some cases cost them their very life. So there's a gravity to what Jesus is speaking to the people that I want you to get. Are you tracking with me? Great, let's keep reading. Verse 34, Jesus says, but I tell you, do not swear an oath at all. Stop there. I'm gonna dissect this and then dissect the next part, okay? So, but I tell you, this is Jesus's way of saying, okay, remember we've been talking about, John Mark has been teaching us this, but this is Jesus's way of saying, okay, here's what we think this means, here's what you think this means, but what it actually means, right? When he's like, but I tell you, it's an indicator that he's about to tell us something deeper, something more. And he's saying this in such a way that he's saying, in my kingdom, or in the new reality that I'm ushering in, there's a better way to live. And he goes on to say, do not swear an oath at all, which for the people at the day, that time, that place, that day would have been like, what? Don't swear any oaths at all? after hundreds of years of utilizing a system of oaths and vows, something that had become the cultural norm, Jesus simply says in one breath, be done with it, all of it. And no doubt, and this is for the nerds in the room, of all the teachings in chapter 5, this should grab our attention. Here's why. In all of his other teachings, as in adultery or divorce, Jesus gets to the heart behind the command. You remember that last week. But he doesn't do away with the command altogether. In this text, we see something different. He says that one should not only make an oath, but they should do away with the system altogether. And while at first it can feel like he's scrapping the scripture, he is in reality turning up the volume. There's this amazing scholar, R.T. France, he's a scholar on the book of Matthew. He's put it this way. Jesus is not so much opposing Old Testament legislation as he is telling his disciples not to take up an option which the law offered but did not require. You see, Jesus was well aware that people were capable of religious practice, or another way to say that is lip service. Jesus knew that oaths were not evidence of a pure heart or a safeguard for the truth. An oath was still able to conceal the heart and the motive of the individual. And that is what Jesus is getting at here. That is where he's directing our attention. He knew that oaths didn't solve the problem of truth-telling, that oaths could still be laced with dishonesty or embellishment or omission, failing to lead one to true integrity, which is what he is after. And so, instead of creating a new system or implementing a new system, he calls us to live in a different way altogether, to see a whole new way of relating to other people, out of a place of dishonesty and manipulation to a place of honesty and ruthless integrity. Now, do you think Jesus knew that to not swear an oath at all, particularly for these people in their day and time, would constantly put his disciples in unavoidable tension, and not only with one another, but with the government as well? Yes. And just like with the other commands, he knew that obeying here would come at a great cost for many of his disciples. Now stay with me, okay? I know it's easy when we look at a text like this to be like, those poor people, how terrible. And it's easy to kind of dismiss ourselves from the text because of the language. We don't use the word oaths very often, or we don't even use the word swearing very often. I don't even think we use swearing for curse words anymore. Right? I mean, I don't know. Swear. I don't know. Do people say that? Anyway, don't tell me later. But I don't know. But one thing I do know from this text is that it's become very clear to me that Jesus' prohibition against oaths has implications for us. In our culture, it looks something like this. We invoke God to damn someone or something. We frequently swear, or we swear to God to convince others who are telling the truth, oftentimes ignorantly presuming that it's harmless to do so. We too make oaths in courtrooms, and we swear our allegiance to a nation. And while I'm honestly still wrestling with the full implications of this text, I am sure that Jesus is unwavering in his call for us to be people of the truth. So much so that, like him, even if we were in a court of law, we wouldn't have to take an oath because we are people who are known by the integrity of our word. This is at the heart of our text tonight. All right, let's keep going. We're almost there. You're like, but where's all the yelling? It's coming. It's coming. Verse 34b. Jesus just finished up saying, but I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, so he goes on to say, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Jesus just got done telling the people that they're not to swear oaths at all. So he's just like, cut that out of their whole mind, and they're like, right? We're like, we just had the lust and divorce. And now we're here with the oaths. You're really dismantling our whole system of life. And he's like, right, that's what I came to do. And he goes on to tell them now that they're not to swear by heaven or by earth or by Jerusalem or even by their head. What is he saying here? Remember that the people of the day knew that they were swearing or taking an oath. And when they did that, they were inviting judgment and accountability. And not a lot of people, come to find out, like being judged by God, you know? So they decided to choose things that were less damning and smiteable, you know what I mean? And so they started just ushering in these things where they would say, I'm going to swear by the heaven and by the earth and by the city that I live in or my own body. And so here Jesus is drawing them in once again, and he's saying, you've been swearing by all of these things, thinking you're evading judgment from God. But God is not bound by the heavens. In fact, he says, that's where his throne is. And on the earth, well, that's his footstool. And in Jerusalem, that is his city. And not only is it his city, but he is the great king of the city. And your head, really? He's like, that's extreme. God made your body, and he is the one who governs it. So we see that the judgment that was trying to be avoided is impossible to avoid. Because what Jesus is saying here is God's presence is everywhere. And now he bears witness to every vow, oath, and commitment you make. And he cares deeply about the integrity of your word. And then the people were like, what? Exactly right. So if we're not to take oaths, I'm sure they were thinking, then what are we supposed to do? Let's look at our final verse together, verse 37. Jesus says, all you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Jesus keeps it simple. He says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Now, you'll notice he repeats these words twice. And in Jesus' society, this was the way to intensify a word. So saying yes really meant yes, and saying no really meant no. He goes on to say that anything that goes beyond the truth is from the evil one. I'm going to say it again. Anything that goes beyond the truth is from the evil one. Or another way to say that is it's sin. Now, upon first reading that, honestly, I thought evil might have been a bit strong. I thought, come on, this is a little bit dramatic for this text, don't you think? But as I studied more, I realized that the evil he addresses is one that is directly linked to an inherently wrong approach to other human beings. After studying this week, I have been honestly and surprisingly pierced with the unavoidable truth that behind every vow, every oath, and every swear is manipulation. Dallas Willard says, when we swear, we are making use of people, trying to bypass their understanding and judgment to trigger their will and possess them for our purposes. In that definition, we find that making an oath or swearing is much more than trying to convince someone that we're telling the truth. It's about manipulating someone, even in the smallest way, at a cost to them for our benefit. And now, if this is the definition we're going to use as we press into this text tonight, then I'm going to tell you right now, I'm in big trouble. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Enneagram. Seems like nobody cares about it here at Bridgetown, but that's a joke because you all care about it. But they tell me I am a 2, and I don't know if you know anything about it, but let me just read you a little definition of what 2s are. This is a personality test on steroids, but it says this. 2s, by definition, are sincere and warm-hearted. Yeah. They are friendly most of the time. they're generous and self-sacrificing. But then there's some other stuff where it says we can be a bit sentimental, flattering, and people-pleasing. And then I'm not only a 2, but I'm actually an I on the DISC test. Do you know what I'm talking about, the DISC? I'm a high I, is what my dad has always said, and he is right. And when I was reading about high I's, I realized there's like this language where they say, what about high I's? And then what are they motivated by? And here's what high I's are motivated by, and I quote, by the approval, flattery, praise, popularity, or acceptance by others. So that just jams me right into a pickle when it comes to this text, right? That's a long way of saying I struggle with this. You know, at some level, I know that we all want to please other people. We want to wow them even. We want to move them. And, you know, it's not beyond me to want you to think I'm just intelligent and pretty. I want you to think more about me. I want you to think, wow, she tells amazing stories. She must be living an amazing life. Like, there's a real part of me, which sounds silly, but wants you to believe that that's true. Now, it is true because Jesus is awesome, but it's also not true in, like, 99% of the other ways that I live my life. And I'm just going to be totally frank. You know, I remember when John Mark was talking about the anger teaching, and he was like, this is kind of my thing, and God's been working on me with it, and I've been growing a lot, and I thought, that's good. And then I got into this text, and I thought, this is my thing. So what a treat. Did the elders pick that out, or how did that work? Because I believe, as I've processed this even a little bit further this week, there will always be a great temptation in my life to embellish a little, to omit the ugly so that the pretty and nice is what you actually see and experience. I have a tendency to brag on the details a bit. I changed the size of the dragon I have slayed, and yet I have slayed a dragon. And I do it, honestly, a lot of times for the sake of inspiration or wonder. And listen, I'm not saying, certainly, that wanting people to feel loved or encouraging them is a bad thing. Of course, I'm not saying that at all. What is bad is when we lie to them so that they don't feel bad about stuff. Or when we lie to them because it makes us look better or stronger or like we have it all together. Or when we lie to them when they so desperately need to hear the truth. John, one of Jesus' disciples, said it this way. He said, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, if that's true, then many of us in this room are regularly keeping people, our friends, our family, other people we encounter day to day, from the freedom that is theirs in Jesus. And it is a serious thing. Jesus is saying that the act of deception or manipulation is in fact evil, and it's destructive every single time. And evil, we know, as disciples of Jesus, has no place in the kingdom of God. Jesus is calling us here to be people of integrity, people who don't need to swear or to make an oath, people who are faithful not only to our word, but to loving God and to loving others and to loving ourselves in a way that leaves no room for deception or manipulation. As I've been thinking about the life of Jesus in light of this command, I am struck by the reality that Jesus did and has done everything that he said he would do. And not just that, people, but you and me and thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions of other people on this planet are basing our future reality on the fact that he will be faithful to what he has said he will do. And so as we're people who are working to become more like him, I think we've got two responses tonight to the text. First one, tell the truth. That sounds easy enough, but if we're going to be serious about obeying Jesus and his calling to us here, then it's going to take work, especially in light of the world that we live in. Think about it. We live in a time and a place when the curation of our lives is an art form. Social media is not a place to simply connect with the world. It's become a breeding ground for lies. And I'm not talking about the blatant kind that I know exist. I'm talking about the kind of lying that's found in embellishment, in omission, in name-dropping, the kind that requires a metaphoric filter or a spin doctor. And I don't know about you, but I mean, listen, the temptation for me is to let other people believe that I'm living my best life now. Right? Thanks, Joel. We're all living it. You know what I'm saying? Also, but not thank you for a lot of other things. Yeah. Living my best life often outweighs my desire to be genuinely honest with other people. And I'm going to be frank. I'm held captive to this. I'm not like outside of this. If you've seen my social media, you know it mostly consists of me with other people, particularly small humans. When I get a boyfriend, he's going to be on there, but until then, it is what it is. The other thing I want to be honest about is you're never going to see an ugly photo of me on Instagram. You won't. Right? 6 filters, 4 angles, and 20 expressions later, I'm good to go. That's how it works for me. Doesn't it work for you? I hope to God it works for you guys that way too. Otherwise, I'm on a struggle bus, and it's headed the wrong direction. Curation is at our fingertips. And I'm not saying filters are bad. God knows we need them, especially for those of us who are over 30, right? What I am cautioning us towards is the sticky and easily championed form of communication that fabricates far more than it is honest. I don't have beef with social media or the media as a whole necessarily. It's just that it seems that it's the place in our day and time that I believe we most often fall into the illusion of dishonesty, which in the long run, believers, robs us of our integrity. And then from there, we know it builds and it spills in other areas of our life. It's easy to offer small lies about being late to something or to omit information from a certain story, to cut corners with our integrity, because we believe it's really not doing any harm. And that's where the rub is, right? The thing about telling the truth is that it has powerful ramifications for better and for worse. All throughout our culture, we're told to minimize, to stuff, to justify the truth or lack thereof. We're taught to keep our mouths shut and to bite our tongues, and we're told to do this over and over again until what I'm afraid is true, we can't discern what is actually true anymore. All of us have experienced the deep pain of being lied to, of having the truth twisted or omitted, of being manipulated by someone else for their gain, big or small. And all of us, at one time or another, have experienced the powerful weight of lies and lying. We know how it perverts the truth, which leads us to a place of chaos and confusion and a mess of relational problems. We know how it can disorient us to the point where we don't even know who we are anymore, which is another ramification of telling the truth or not telling the truth. My best friend is a therapist, and just this week we were talking about how lies continue to be the greatest tool or weapon that the enemy uses to maximize trauma and distort someone's identity. How a lie can be told for so long that people actually begin to live into the reality of that lie, over and above, literally over and above the reality that is present before their eyes. See, that's the thing about telling the truth. We're now a people who are conditioned for distortion. We're taught to fear speaking out and speaking the truth. We're taught to fear believing the truth. And I know the temptation here would be to check out. Because when God's putting conditions like this on us, or it feels like he's putting conditions like this from his word on us, there's a desire to be like, I can't. It's too much. I'm never going to fit your system. God's not being persnickety here. Did I write persnickety? I did, you guys. So, but just like with Jesus, there's always more to this story. See, I believe that Jesus is calling us to tell the truth with our whole lives because he knows better than we know that when we do that, it becomes a place where trust is built and where intimacy is cultivated. And so many of us are missing out on trust and intimacy, not only with God, but with the people in our lives who are dear to us, all because we're not willing to tell the truth. Jesus is a master shepherd, and here he's telling us, I know better than you do. You think this is just a set of rules, and I'm even giving you the heart behind the rules, which is really generous of him. But he's also saying there's a better way to live. There's a place and space for human flourishing. I'm not putting these limits or setting these parameters or throwing out the oaths because I don't care, and I'm some coolio from the streets. He's doing it because he loves us deeply and profoundly. Finally, I think there's a call to live the truth. Or another way to say this is to live intentionally, which means that we press into honesty and faithfulness even if it costs us something. And let me remind you, it will always cost you something. We tell the whole truth with our whole lives. That's the MO. And it means that we're going to do what we say we're going to do. And we're going to do it when we actually say we're going to do it. We're not going to cancel the day of or 30 minutes before we're supposed to be somewhere. We show up when we say we will. And you know what? Some of you might even show up on time and really bless some people, honestly. I mean, that's a word to me. I receive it. Thank you, Lord, for that. We need to live into the reality that so many of us are what culture calls flaky. My friend Josh from Van City, you guys know him. He's very cool. He has this phrase he always says. He's like, oh, man, they're a flaky biscuit. And so we just call people biscuits. So if you ever hear us call you that, there's a reason. And the truth is, I was thinking about this. He wrote a blog about it. It's really good. And I was thinking about how he kind of coined this language for me. And I just thought, good grief, we are a generation of hot, flaky biscuits. Right? I mean, it's funny, and then it's also true. David Brooks, he's a columnist for the New York Times. He talks about flakiness and a lack of integrity in his article called The Age of Bailing. He says, bailing is one of the defining acts of the current moment because it stands at the nexus of so many larger trends. The ambiguity of modern social relationships, the fraying of commitments, what my friend, his friend, Haley Darden calls the ethic of flexibility, ushered in by smartphone apps, not to mention the decline of civilization, the collapse of morality, and the ruination of all we hold dear. Now, a bit dramatic at the end, David. pull it up, right? But it makes it no less true or poignant for this moment in time. We as people, we're trying to become like our rabbi. And we believe at the heart of all he's teaching us is that his words lead us to life, which means we must become people who are reliable. We must become people who are trustworthy, who are faithful and full of integrity, people whose yeses and nos actually mean something to people. We must become people who can be honest with others because we have first been honest with God. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this is not a strength of mine, this area. About 2 weeks ago, I had to have a really hard and uncomfortable conversation with a friend. Now, this friend is super dear to me, love and respect immensely, when I tell you family level, like love. And the conversation went something like this. My feelings were hurt a lot because I hadn't been invited to their daughter's birthday party, and all my other friends had. And I saw it on Insta story and all the photos. And I found myself getting sad and angry. Now, I know how it sounds. You're a bit sensitive. We read that earlier. Right, I am. And I'm good at pity parties. I had a long experience in middle school and high school practicing those, so I know how to throw them very well. So if you're thinking that, that's accurate as well. And I know how small it can sound to a room this large. And with that, I tried to bury it. I was like, this is so silly. Just move on with your life and be a big girl. Ignore it. Put some cupcakes in. You'll feel better immediately if you try that. And so I did. And yet, those nagging, lingering feelings remained. And then when I saw my friend, those feelings were heightened. And last thing I wanted to do, right, I have to tell him I didn't get the invite. I felt left out. It oddly felt a lot like middle school, you know. And honestly, for those of you who are thinking, middle school didn't feel like that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. For some of us, it did. So anyway, took a walk with my friend. I was like, hey, we got to talk. I had to like be the grown-up and emotionally healthy. And so I was like, hey, let's take a walk. And I was like, I didn't want to tell him really because I didn't want him to feel bad for not inviting me. The last thing I wanted to do was like, you know, be that girl who's like, you're very bad. And so that was bad. And I didn't want to be that. So then I shared all my feelings and my reason. I was like, you know, it might be a little crazy, but also a big deal. And so then my friend shared back. And this is where it actually began to hurt. You see, that day I learned that I wasn't invited to the party because I had been invited previously to two other birthday parties for their kids. And to one, I said I would go, and I didn't go. And to the other, I just didn't show up altogether. And, when he shared this with me, I felt super humiliated and hurt. But not because I was the victim, but because I had let them down. And because I had hurt them, really, based on my lack of integrity and my lack of follow-through. And what you got to know, these people are my people, like I said, they're my family. And the fact that I hurt them about did me in. I mean, I'm very rarely without words. I had, like, none for 5 minutes. And it was a long time for me. And the reality is, whether I liked it or not, my actions, my lack of integrity hurt my friendship. And in turn, in the long run, hurt me. Do you get what I'm saying? What we say, what we do, when we show up, how we speak, where we follow through, what we give when we say we're going to give, they're all connected to being people of our words, people of integrity, to being Jesus people. This week, as I've studied the Sermon on the Mount more at length, I began to see this weird thread I had never seen before. R.T. France, that scholar, that Matthew scholar, puts it perfectly. He said, we're a people who aim to control human failure. And in the previous teachings over the past couple weeks, we've seen with extraordinary and honestly disturbing clarity our proclivity as human beings to dehumanize, to objectify, to oppress, and now to manipulate, all for the sake of our own benefit and pleasure. When we're angry, we minimize and dehumanize others by declaring that they're an idiot or a fool. When we become impatient with love or intimacy, we objectify. When we're unhappy in our marriage or with our spouse, we oppress. And now, here, when we can't tell the truth because of our fear or our unbelief or our desire to hide or our desire even to deceive, we manipulate other people through our words. We try to cover ourselves at another's expense. We try to protect ourselves from the reality of the consequences of our actions and our words. And hear me, church, we are a generation who keeps doing this. We keep doing this, and we do not stop. And right here tonight, this is Jesus' proclamation to us. He's saying, quit it. Not because I've told you to do something or I'm putting you in some small box, but because there's a better way to live. The greatest commandment is to love God and love who? Others. And here, as he keeps saying in this sermon that we keep sitting in over and over again, he's calling us to love God better, to tell him the whole truth, and then to tell others the whole truth. And he's saying, that's your roadmap to freedom. So many of us sit in here tonight in bondage because we've been lying for years. Or we've been believing a lie that was spoken over us by our dad or our mom or whoever it was, and we have been in bondage. And tonight, Jesus' proclamation is powerful. He's saying, you don't have to do that crap. No more hiding. My call tonight is for freedom and for life. Now, it's scary. Even that weird conversation about me not going to a kid's birthday party, which nobody likes to go to anyway. I mean, right? Except for the cake. I'm like all in. On the cake. It was awkward. It cost me something. It cost me this strange vulnerability where I was telling myself the whole time, and that's when I realized I'm trained and conditioned to say it doesn't matter, to dismiss thoughts. And some of you tonight have been dismissing thoughts the entire time I've been teaching. These narratives that are actually true, trying to break through the stronghold of lies in your life. And you keep pushing them back and pushing them back and pushing them back. And tonight Jesus is saying there's a better way to live. Isn't it exhausting? It's exhausting to cut corners and try to remember the little accents you put on different stories from here to there. I mean, God help you if you're in a room full of people who all know you and you've told the story to about 6 times. That happens frequently. And I'm like, what did I leave out? What did I say? Why did I do that? Why do we do that? I wondered in this teaching so much what it would look like if we were people, if all of us decided to tell the truth. To tell the truth to God and to tell the truth to one another. Tonight, the call is to do away with lying. It's not only to tell the truth and to stick to our word, but it is to not use words to manipulate one another for our own benefit. And what I love about this teaching, what I've been encouraged about, because I'm knee-deep in it with you. What I've been encouraged about is this is not an empty invitation Jesus is extending to us tonight. It's in this call that Jesus is declaring it is possible for us, possible for us to be free, to live in a space where we don't have regrets anymore, to live in a space where we don't have a mess to clean up or strings attached. We don't have to do self-preservation or self-condemnation. There's not a space for cover-ups or for guilt, just a call to freedom and to life to the full, and that's what he's extending to us tonight. Remember that Jesus is gentle. If you're feeling any sense of condemnation or guilt, that's from Satan himself. Jesus is here, like in his beauty and his goodness, and he's saying to you, beloved, I have something so much better. The question is, what will you do with it? You've heard this teaching before, but what will you do tonight? Do you believe there could be a different reality for you? A greater reality, greater intimacy in your marriage, greater intimacy in your friendships and relationship, that thing you're longing for the most comes by way of the truth. And it's for us tonight. Would you stand with me? We're going to pray together.